So we're continuing with our study of the Bhagavad Gita as it is in the fifth chapter. So Om Gana Timiranda Shah Gananjana Shlakaya Chakshuram Meditam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha. I offer my respectful obeisances unto the lotus feet of my spiritual master, His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. Oh, he came back. That's good. So the fifth chapter is called Karma Yoga, Action in Krishna Consciousness. Let me just describe why the chapter is called Karma Yoga, or what Karma Yoga is. Because people have a conception about the word yoga. Generally, when you hear the word yoga, what do you think? Exercise. You think basically asanas and pranayama, right? These are the two things you think. I mean, there's eightfold processes, yam, niyam, asana, pranayama, pratyahara, dharana, dhyana, samadhi. I understand that. But generally, when people hear the word yoga, they think asana and pranayama, particularly asana, more than pranayama. Actually, I have one disciple who knows 1,000 yoga postures. He's one of the 10 most expert asana people in the world. And he practices for 4 hours a day. In addition to his teaching, he teaches asanas for 4 hours, 5 hours a day, and practices for 4 hours, while the rest of us are chanting Hare Krishna. He's practicing his asanas, and he does some amazing things with his asanas. It's his business. It's okay. He's very nice. He's very good at it. Not to criticize. However, the word yoga basically means to connect oneself with the Supreme. So the process of asana is part of the hatha yoga process that leads up to connecting yourself with the Supreme, although the asanas in and of themselves don't connect you with Krishna, nor does the pranayama connect you with Krishna. But it's the bhakti that connects you with Krishna. So these are all, let us say, preliminary steps. There's many different preliminary steps in the yoga ladder. There's the Sankhya. Sankhya is specifically mentioned in this verse. Sankhya means the analytical study of matter to analyze what we are and what we're not. In other words, as Srila Prabhupada, giving a simple idea of Sankhya. Let's say, here's a hand, right? Right? High five, as they say. So here's, the children all like to do high five nowadays, don't they? Whenever I see it, no more obeisances, just high five. So here's a hand. So let's do analysis. Am I this hand? No. That's Sankhya. Am I this nose? No. Am I this lack of hair? No. Am I this ear? So go through the whole body. No. So what am I? Of course, some scientists will say, well, I'm the brain. That's not really true. So that's a simple version of Sankhya. The more complex version is the analysis of the different material elements, like earth, water, fire, air, mind, intelligence, false ego, the perceptive senses. Does everyone know what that means? That means the senses that can see, hear, touch, smell, taste, and then the active senses like that. And then there's also the subtle material elements, and ultimately false ego, and there's the super soul. Anyway, there's a whole analysis there that's done. A very exacting analysis to come to the point of understanding we're not the body. And then at that point, what you got to do, you got to do something about it. So people do different things about that understanding, or with that understanding. Some people, they just sit there and say, I'm not the body. But then they keep acting as if they were the body. That's kind of weird, isn't it? That's called hypocritical. I'm not the body, I'm not the body. Well, let me enjoy this body. That's pretty... Maybe they're not hypocritical, but they just don't have the realization. Okay? So you got to do something. Once you understand that you're not the body... What are you? So people have different philosophies of what are you. Some people say, we're nothing. Nothing is real. Strawberry fields forever. That's one thing people say. That's the Buddhist, the original Buddhist philosophy, voidism. Other people will say, we're all one. I'm you and you're me. I remember one time I was talking to someone, and he kept insisting that we're one. And I said, okay, your money is my money. And I reached into his pocket, took out his wallet. You know, I don't have that much training as a pickpocket. But I reached into his wallet, took out his money, and said, okay, thank you. And he said, what are you doing? You're stealing my... No, you and me, we're the same person. We're one buddy, you know. And he didn't appreciate that argument. And I don't think he surrendered philosophically, and I gave him his wallet back. So that's one other philosophy. Another philosophy is, I'm God. That's another one that people come up with sometimes. And then I just say to them, all right, just do something simple, like fly around the room for me if you're God. Or, you know, Krishna lifted Govardhan Hills, just lift this building, you know. And they said, well, I just haven't realized it yet. And I said, well, let me know when you realize it. I have some requests to make when you realize that you're God. So people have all these different philosophies. You know, what do you do about the point that you're not the body? So what are you? Okay. So we have a different idea. Krishna has a different idea. It's not my idea. My epistemological understanding, that means where I get my knowledge from. It's coming from Krishna. So Krishna says that we're actually his parts and parcels. So therefore, what do you do about it? You act in terms of your real nature. Your real nature is to serve Krishna. It's simple. And if you serve Krishna, you're happy. And then you realize that you're not supposed to serve the body anymore, or the things connected to the body. And it's a real feeling of liberation, happiness, relief. I mean, especially, of course, for young people, you still think you're the body, right? Arvind still thinks he's the body. But when you get older, you're relieved. Thank God I'm not this body. You know, for a young person, you tell them you're not the body, you know, go preach to someone else, isn't it? I don't care, you know. But for an old person, wow, thank you for giving me this information. Wow. Just like, I'll give you an example. My grandfather, he passed away many years ago due to Parkinson's disease. And he asked me in the final days, I was with him in his final days, he asked me, where am I going? What's life all about? And my grandmother said to him, shut up, don't ask those questions. And the first time in his life, he went like that to her, even though he had Parkinson's disease, and said, no, you shut up. And she had never experienced that from him in her whole life, you know, after 70 years of marriage or whatever it was. And then I explained to him, I said, you're not the body, and because you're connected with someone who's a devotee, you myself, doing devotional service, here's some prasadam, then you're going to a much better destination in your next life. As Krishna says in the Gita, one who makes a little progress, he goes to the heavenly planets. That's pretty good. From living in Miami Beach, that's where he was living, to the heavenly planets. And so he was very happy and relieved. Oh, thank you very much. And probably he's in heaven right now, I guess with Indra and some of the other demigods, watching some interesting dramatic performances. So, in any case, it's a relief to understand we're not this body, this purpose of this material world. So, what Bhagavad Gita, the first two verses in this chapter deal with the difference between the analytical study of matter and spirit and what's called karma yoga. I said I would explain what karma yoga is. Karma yoga means to connect with Krishna, God, through work. So one who studies things, comes to the proper understanding that he is part and parcel of Krishna, will connect with Krishna through work. And he will be detached. And let's go on with the Bhagavad Gita after that brief introduction. Who can read text 3 for us? Mother Krishna Priya, why don't you start?
One who neither hates nor desires the fruits of his activities is known to be always renounced. Such a person, free from all dualities, easily overcomes material bondage and is completely liberated, almighty armed Arjuna.
So here we see, let's describe what dualities are first. Dualities means happiness, distress, heat and cold, you and me. So once you're freed from those, the only way to be freed from dualities is to realize you're not the body. The only way to realize you're not the body is to realize who you are. You can't just realize you're not the body by saying, you're not the body. You can chant that all you want. Go to the hospital with someone who's really sick and tell them they're not the body. See what the result will be. They will get angry. They want compassion. They want empathy. So if you realize what you are, if you have a real life, you won't be interested in the other life. If you have a higher taste, you won't be interested in the lower taste. Right? Like if you have an iPhone, you won't be interested in a Motorola phone. Does anyone understand that example? No. You don't like that example. You like Android system. Anyway. Higher taste. So of course, that's not absolutely true. I mean, but I'm just giving an example. Like, in this world, if you have something better, like, let's use cars then. Let's say you have a Mercedes, you won't be interested in a Yugo. A Yugo is a car that was made in previous Yugoslavia that basically has the same sort of mechanism that the Jetsons car had. Flintstones. I'm sorry. You stick your feet out, and you have to propel the car with your feet. Basically, it's like that. So, if you have a real life, Jetsons anyway. So, if you have a real life that's there with Krishna, eternal, blissful life, playful all the time, no misery, no ignorance, eternal. Wow. Then why are you going to be interested in the dualities of this world? You'll be detached. And you won't hate or desire anything in this world. That's called nirupeksha, where someone is disinterested in the things of this world. A true spiritualist is not negative towards the things of this world. He's just disinterested. I'm having a good time. For example, sometimes people, I know some people who really like to go to the movies and see like superheroes in the movies. And they say to me sometimes, I won't mention his name, but they say to me sometimes that, would you like to go to the movies and see, Superman or Batman or whatever, it doesn't matter. Or Purple Lantern, I know it's Green Lantern. Then I say, no, I have nothing against it. It's just I'm having a good time serving Krishna. You understand? So if you're having a good time doing what's natural, because we're talking about natural, it's very important to be natural. I mean, different people have different concepts of what natural means. Some people think it means to eat organic food. Other people think it means to go to a place where people take their clothes off. Oh, natural. But to be natural, means to act in terms of your nature, and you have to know what your nature is. And then you're happy if you're natural. So then you're not interested in the fruits of your work. And this is what this verse is stating in the Bhagavad Gita. Let's go on to texts 4-5. Who's going to read that? Both texts.
Only the ignorant speak of devotional service, karma yoga, as being different from the analytical study of the material world. Those who are actually learned say that the who applies himself well to one of these paths achieves the results of both. Text 5. One who knows that the position reached by means of analytical study can also be attained by devotional service, and who therefore sees analytical study and devotional service to be on the same level, sees sees things as they are.
So this is very simple. You see, jnana, karma here refers to karma yoga, not karma in the sense of a karmic reaction. Karma yoga means, karma means work, yoga means connection. Work that connects you with Krishna. So work that connects you with Krishna and knowledge to become detached and understand who you are ultimately end up in the same place. But the knowledge is a preliminary step, and then the work for Krishna is a higher step. And here's a ladder that illustrates that. Actually, the karma should be higher. The jnana is down there. This is a mistake here. And the karma, jnana is there, the understanding of who you are, and then the karma becomes higher, and ultimately there's bhakti at the top. Now, what's the difference between pure karma yoga and bhakti yoga? It's a very interesting question people ask. In one sense, there's no difference. But if any of you understand set theory, you know, with circles inside of other circles, that if one is performing bhakti yoga, one is automatically performing karma yoga. There's a little syllogism. It's called the syllogism. But if one's performing karma yoga, it's not automatic that one's performing bhakti yoga. And I'll explain that. Karma yoga means to work for Krishna. Bhakti yoga means to work for Krishna with love. Because many people work for Krishna or work for God out of a sense of duty or fear. There's different reasons, right? Or what they want. Who knows an example of someone who worked or meditated on God to get something? Dhruva. That, when he started, that was not bhakti yoga. That, in the beginning, it was karma yoga. It's a step. It's not the highest step, the karma yoga. So Dhruva, for those of you who don't know who Dhruva is, Dhruva was a little boy, and he was extremely disappointed because he couldn't sit on his father's lap. His father's name was Uttanapada. His father had two wives. Don't try that at home. It doesn't work, especially in Kali Yuga. His father had two wives, Suruchi and Suniti. Suruchi means the lady had a good taste. Anyway, so we'll get into the analysis of the names. So Suruchi had a son named Uttama, and Suniti had Dhruva. So Suruchi was much more beautiful than Suniti. I mean, she was gorgeous. And therefore she had the king, Uttanapada, wrapped around her finger. And so Dhruva, one time, who was the son of Suniti, not Suruchi, he went and sat on his father's lap, King Uttanapada's lap. And Suruchi, having the king wrapped around her little finger, and also being a little challenged as far as envy is concerned, politically correct. So a little challenge. We don't want to say she was envious. She was challenged. So she said to Dhruva, get down from your father's lap. Yeah. Only my son can sit on your father's lap. And King Uttanapada, he didn't say anything. He just remained very, very quiet because he was afraid of displeasing his beloved. So fearful. Imagine that, isn't it? Phew. As a sannyasi, I can't understand these things, but some of you may understand. So she said to Dhruva, the only way you can sit on your father's lap is if you take birth from my womb. Can you imagine that? And you better pray to Lord Vishnu, because that's the only way you're going to accomplish your goal. And so poor Dhruva, he left the room crying. And then he went to his mother, Suniti, and said, what can I do? And his mother said, well, since your father got married to this girl, Suruchi, I'm really not the queen anymore. My rights have been taken away from me. So Sudhiruchi was right. The only way you'll sit on your father's lap is if you take birth as her son. And you better pray to Lord Vishnu. But she didn't understand that Dhruva Maharaj was so determined that not only did he want to pray to Lord Vishnu, but he wanted to execute austerities and see Lord Vishnu and get Lord Vishnu's help and talk to Lord Vishnu. I mean, it's one thing. If you just want to pray to Krishna, then you just come to the temple and you pray, "My dear Krishna, please let me sit on my father's lap." You know, I don't think any of you have that request here. Usually you're requesting, "Please let this business be successful. Please, you know, if you're an unmarried girl, please let me meet the most handsome man, Rambo," or something like that. Usually, right, or for money or for a job or something like that. But he was asking to sit on his father's lap. Usually you'll just pray to the deities. Not many of you are going to go to the forest and sit down for many years giving up eating and drinking and breathing just to get some money. But Dhruva Maharaj was so determined because he was a Kshatriya. So he left home. And even though he was... let us say he met Narada Muni, and Narada Muni attempted to dissuade him from going to the forest and meditating. He was so determined, he said, "I can't accept that instruction to go back home. Please give me a mantra that I can chant." And he chanted Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. And eventually, giving up eating, sleeping, water, and breathing, he performed so many austerities, meditating on the Lord without stopping the mantra, that Krishna came to him. So that, in the beginning, that was karma yoga. He wanted something. So there's different reasons. And then ultimately Krishna came to him and he thought, "I was looking for some pieces of broken glass and now I found a beautiful, a wonderful gem." So then he gave up his, let us say, mixed motivation and then became a pure devotee to the Lord. At that point he was executing bhakti yoga. At that point, when he gave up the mixed motivation. You understand what I mean? Of course, usually we do have mixed motivations up to the point of complete purity. We do want to keep our jobs. We do want to be relatively healthy, isn't it? We want to be peaceful in our mind. But one who is actually a pure devotee of the Lord, his only motivation is to please Krishna. That's described in the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, and Yavi Lashita Shunyam Jnanakarma Anabritam Anukul Yena Krishna Anushilanam Bhakti Uttamam. That one who is a pure bhakti yogi only wants to serve Krishna in the way that Krishna wants to be served, and he's serving Krishna with love without any impurity or self centered motivations. Even he doesn't have the motivation of liberation, which is pretty exalted. So that's bhakti yoga, that's the topmost rung there in the path. So I think everyone understands the difference between karma yoga and jnana yoga and bhakti yoga. But automatically, if you're doing bhakti yoga, you're doing karma yoga. But if you're doing karma yoga, you may have other motivations. You're not automatically doing bhakti yoga. I hope that's clear. That's a really important point to understand. Okay, let's go on. This is also text 4 and 5, which we did already. That is karma at work. You become attached to the spirit. That means serving Krishna. And jnana renunciation, you become detached from matter. So being attached to spirit automatically brings detachment from matter. There's one interesting verse. Vasudeva Bhagavati Bhakti Yoga Prayojita Janayati Asu Vairagyam Jnanam Cha Yadahaitakam. By performing devotional service to Krishna, automatically causeless knowledge and detachment arises. Detachment arises because you're having a higher taste. It's not that you become numb, like under Novocaine. Like you could say, when you're at the dentist gives you some Novocaine, right? Everyone knows what Novocaine is? It's a local anesthetic. anesthesia. You understand? And so you become numb. So you become real a little detached until it wears off. It does wear off after a while, right? And then you go home and go, ah, I can't believe what he did to me. So pure jnana, maybe something like that. You become detached or numb to the material world, but after a while it wears off. And you become attached again. Think about that example. Novocaine, pure jnana. It's an interesting example. But work for Krishna means you become attached to spirit. In the beginning of the performance of bhakti yoga, we're talking about mixed devotional service, one is actually attached to the work itself. But at the end, one is attached to the devotional spirit. So, in other words, we function according to our psychophysical nature. That's varnashram, which we described in a previous verse. So one likes to do something based on their own nature. A businessman likes to do business, he does it for Krishna. A preacher, so sannyasi, likes to speak, he does it for Krishna. A vaisya likes to make money. A kshatriya likes to manage, he does it for Krishna. So he's attached to that aspect, the external aspects of service, which is good. But then ultimately one becomes attached to the bhakti ras. Bhakti ras means the taste from exchanging love with Krishna and pleasing Krishna. Ultimately one becomes willing to do anything Krishna wants. And here's the conclusion. Detachment from matter and attachment to spirit are one and the same. You can't have one without the other. And in this sense, jnana is as good as karma, but karma is more practical. Because while developing attachment to spirit, one simultaneously develops detachment from matter, and that detachment continues. Like the Novocaine example I just gave. It doesn't wear off. You don't wake up in the morning with a spirit ache. Or a headache or whatever it is. Okay? And we'll just go on. Let's go to text 6. And then we'll take some questions after that. So who wants to read text 6?
Merely renouncing all activity, yet not engaging in the devotional service of the Lord, cannot make one happy. But a thoughtful person engaged in devotional service can achieve the supreme without delay.
Hmm. And in this particular verse, Prabhupada talks about two types of sannyasis. One type that works for Krishna. Hopefully I'm that type. And then another type that just acquires knowledge and becomes detached. And generally we see those who just acquire knowledge and become detached without working for Krishna, they find it quite boring. Like if I say, just become detached, no chanting, no offering food to Krishna, no Krishna's pastimes, just be detached. You are not the body. It's kind of boring after a while. I'll give you an example. In Lord Chaitanya's pastimes, there was one famous sannyasi named Prakashananda Saraswati, and it was in Benares. Benares is a famous place for sannyasis who just try to become detached. They're called Mayavadi sannyasis. Okay. So Lord Chaitanya, there was a whole group of them, and Prakashananda Saraswati, he was the head of the whole group. So Lord Chaitanya, he came to Benares, and he didn't want to hang out with them because they were so dry. You know, they invited him to eat with them, and he was thinking, what am I going to eat with them? They're not eating prasadam. And what am I going to talk about with them? I'm Brahman, you're Brahman, we're all Brahman. It's kind of boring after a while, right? You're God, I'm God, Om Namo Narayan, Om Namo Narayan, Om Namo Narayan. No chanting, dancing, or anything like that. So they were just sitting there being bored the whole time, following the party line, what was taught to them by Shankaracharya. So Lord Chaitanya eventually agreed to go where they were because one of his followers was very upset because these sannyasis, the Mayavadi sannyasis, were criticizing Lord Chaitanya. What were they criticizing him for? For dancing and chanting and enjoying life in a spiritual way. You know, they were sitting there. You're not the body. Why is he chanting? Why is he dancing? Oh, he's not a good sannyasi. Come on. Isn't it? They were acting. Hey, you can just picture them in your mind's eye. They were all sitting there, you know, morose. He's a member of the sannyas sampradaya. And he's just dancing like some low-class person. Of course, they didn't speak in a southern accent. But so they were real upset. You know, why do they have to criticize him? If they were happy in Brahman, why would they criticize anybody, right? That proof that they weren't happy in Brahman was that they were actually criticizing someone. If you're happy, why are you going to criticize? You'll try to help the other person. So they were criticized. Finally, the disciple of Lord Chaitanya said to Lord Chaitanya, I can't stand to hear this criticism. Please go to see them. So Lord Chaitanya at the same time got an invitation from the person who was hosting all these sannyasis. And then Lord Chaitanya went to the place where all the sannyasis were. And instead of just like joining them, he just sat down in the place where people would wash their feet. And that's considered a very unclean place. And at the same time, he exhibited an effulgence like 10,000 times as bright as the sun. You can imagine. Pretty bright. And, of course, the Mayavadis, they all thought, oh, at least he's realized he's God. Of course, Lord Chaitanya is God. It's not a question of realization. But they were thinking, wow, he's a perfected Mayavadi. That was their conception. So Lord Chaitanya sat there and they thought, wow, you realize you're Narayan. And what they did is they extended, Prakrishnanda Saraswati extended his hand and took Lord Chaitanya from that place and put him in a better seat. And that was the beginning of Prakrishnanda's devotional service. That's called the Gyata Sukriti. And then he asked Lord Chaitanya, why are you dancing and chanting like such low-class person? You know, you're supposed to just study Vedanta all day long. You know, study Vedanta. Atato Brahma Jigyasa. Now's the time to search for the absolute truth. Yamajasya Yataha. The absolute truth is that from which everything comes. The Vedanta is a series of codes. That means short statements that are meant for people who know what the statements mean. They're actually commentaries on the Upanishads, specific Upanishads. That's the Vedanta Sutra. So, Lord Chaitanya very humbly said to Prakashananda, he said, my spiritual master told me I was a fool, and therefore, just chant Hare Krishna. And he said, and I started chanting this mantra, and I started feeling so much ecstasy and crying and rolling on the ground. And I went to my spiritual master and said, what kind of mantra are you giving me? And the spiritual master said, Lord Chaitanya was reciting this, that I'm very pleased you've achieved the ultimate perfection by chanting and dancing. And then they asked Lord Chaitanya, but what about Vedanta? And then Lord Chaitanya proceeded to defeat them philosophically and to show them that the conclusion of Vedanta, is to worship Krishna. That's the conclusion. Even in the Rig Veda, Om Tad Vishnu Paramam Pada Pashanti Yat Surya, there's that injunction. All the demigods are looking to Krishna. So I proved to them that the goal of Vedanta was to worship Krishna, and they became converted. They became devotees. A very nice story. So anyway, so because they were bored, they were just sitting there criticizing everybody. He's in Maya. He's in Maya. He's not a good sannyasi. And so this is what's happening here. Because if you just engage in jnana, you'll be bored, like these ants. They're not bored, of course. And they don't have much jnana, but we use that as an example. So, and therefore, we perform nishkama karma yoga. That means, nishkama means without personal motivation to please Krishna. Karma yoga, serving, and connecting with Krishna through the work. Okay? So any questions or comments? Get up to text 6. Yes, Rishikesh.
What kind of activities we can perform instead?
Well, the chanting is the most important activity. Actually, we're supposed to be performing devotional service in practice right now. In practice means following certain rules and regulations, chanting a certain number of rounds of the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra, rising at a certain time, offering your food to Krishna. This is the basic thing. And then also whatever activities you do during the day, offering the fruits to Krishna. That's the process His Divine Grace Srila Prabhupada has given us. It's a very simple, practical process, isn't it? And be patient. Utsahan nisya dariyata karma pravartanat. The secret to success is patience, determination. Isn't it? Enthusiasm. So, you know, Rome wasn't built in a day, as they say. And you're not going to become Krishna conscious. You could, if you want. But do you want enough? Maybe not. But you're not going to become Krishna conscious like that. So you'll be patient. But every day it gets better. As we're going to read later on in this chapter, when one is enlightened by the knowledge by which nescience is destroyed, then his knowledge, then it's like the sun coming up. And one is enlightened by the knowledge by which nescience is destroyed, it's like the sun coming up in the morning. So when the sun comes up in the morning, it comes up gradually. It's not like turning the light bulb on, is it? Or like a photo flash bulb. Something like that. It's gradual. So every day you can measure your progress in Krishna consciousness. That is, the knowledge you're getting, the happiness, the detachment, the attraction to Krishna, all these things are measurable. I mean, internally. We're not talking about measuring with your computer, but you can attach some electrodes to your head, and your computer is going to give you a wave like that. Going up, but it's something that you can personally experience. So perform bhakti yoga in practice. And later on you come to the point of bhakti yoga spontaneously. Later on you come to the point of bhakti yoga with emotions, with great emotions. It's bhava bhakti. And later on you come to the point of prema bhakti. So it's step by step. And even within bhakti there's many different steps. So one other question?
So it says that Gyana is boring, but they were criticizing Lord Chaitanya that he doesn't study the Vedanta. So they must have a lot of words in their books. So how could it be so boring?
Well, Lord Chaitanya did study Vedanta. But if one just studies Vedanta, that's boring. If you just sit, if you're a bookworm, you sit down all day long, and you just study, yeah, there are a lot of words, and it's... It can be interesting, but you got to do something about it. Like if you just read, I mean, let's take an ordinary thing like baseball. Is baseball season now? I don't know. Anyway, I was in the airport and I saw some people playing baseball. Not in the airport, on the TV screen, okay? So I assume it's baseball season. I may be wrong. Don't criticize me for that. So let's say you read about baseball. Okay. Baseball means that someone has a stick of wood and someone throws a ball at that stick of wood and someone behind the stick of wood is called a catcher. If it goes within a certain zone, how big is the zone? Does anyone know? Anyone know baseball here? No.
Knees to the letters.
What?
From the knees to the letters.
Okay. Okay. Thank you. Now I'm enlightened. So if it goes in the zone from the knees to the letters across your chest, what if you're real tall, like 9 feet tall?
A big strike zone.
Okay, so it's better to be small. So you read about baseball, and you read about it. It's not so interesting. It's better to see it, isn't it? And it's even better to do it. I mean, in this world, that's life. It's better to be active. I mean, I know nowadays most people, the only exercise they get is their thumb on the remote control. I would never want to thumb wrestle anyone anymore. But it's better to be active and do something that's fun. You know, chanting for Krishna, dancing for Krishna, serving Krishna. And that's what they do in the spiritual world. Everyone is serving Krishna. Even the trees are serving Krishna in the spiritual world. The trees are giving fruits, shade, and other things for Krishna. The cows are serving Krishna. That's where the joy is. The joy is in loving exchanges, right? It's just like if someone's married. If you just say, theoretically, I love you. Like if your wife says, do you love me? And you say, theoretically. It seems like a good idea. Watch out. You better get a catcher's mask at that point. Baseball. You know, you better do something about it. You better buy some flowers, FTD, you know, right away. Or else you're going to be in trouble. So you have to, you know, action. Action speaks louder than words. It's not just a question of faith. If you actually have faith, then you'll act according to that faith. That's the test of faith. Like people say, sometimes people come up to me and say, you just have to believe. You know, whatever religion it is, they just have to believe. Believe in Krishna and you'll be saved. Well, if you believe in Krishna, you believe in his words. And if you believe in his words, you'll do what he says, right? So the test of belief is action. Does that make sense? If you say, I believe that you're God. Well, serve me. No, I just believe you're God. Huh? For me, it's a non sequitur. In other words, it doesn't logically follow like that. Okay, so we have to end because the program goes late now. Thank you very much. It's been interesting. All glories to his divine grace. Srila Prabhupada, Srila Prabhupada ki jai.